What's up, everybody? Welcome to Full Draw Friday number 80. This week, I'm talking about a recent post from Tim Wells that kind of went viral on Facebook, especially in the Illinois groups and things like that. So that's what I'm going to get into on this Full Draw Friday. Now, there's no Austin this week. You guys might have noticed that. He's got a lot of stuff going on trying to get some things done at work before the rain comes in. So we pushed off last week for the same reason, and then this week I'm just going to do solo episode for this Friday. He'll be back next week. We'll be back to talking about natural brows. But on this episode, I'd seen this post going around, and I'm sure a lot of you have as well, especially the listeners of this show, from Tim Wells. If you guys don't know him, go look him up. He's the guy that kills stuff with a spear. But he had posted about Illinois deer and the herd and kind of some things of that nature. And I'm going to read the post on here, and then I'm going to give my thoughts on it for whatever it's worth. I kicked around the idea of doing a podcast on this. I figured since I'm going to be by myself this week, it'd be a good time to do it. I do think it's an interesting conversation. It's a conversation we've really had in the past on here, so I think it'll be good. Before we get into it, though, don't forget about Racks Big Game Supplements. If you guys are in an area where you can use supplemental feeding, where you can use minerals, where you can use protein blocks, things like that, Racks has got you covered. You can check that out at RacksMineral.com. Use the discount code FULLDRAW, that's all caps, FULLDRAW, and it'll get you 15% off on anything in your order. All right, let's dive into it. I've got a lot of this stuff typed out, so I'm going to be reading a little bit in this episode just to kind of get my thoughts all in order. I think I might also post the actual written version of this really close to what I'm going to be talking about, so that way everybody can see it. But I'm going to start with his post. And he starts, "Are the glory days nearly over for Illinois quality bucks? Illinois is proposing longer seasons as well as rifle hunting. While EHD and overhunting has most of us seeing less and less deer, Illinois continues its aggressive herd reduction efforts despite what veteran hunters want. Within my circle of friends and other hunters around the state, we see less deer and mature buck numbers have tanked as well. Still, the state strives to kill more. Landowners practicing whitetail management find it too rough when the neighbors have a handful of tags in their pocket. You better control a lot of ground for your local herd of whitetail, otherwise the outcome ultimately is over-harvest. In a solid block of timber, five farms can practice whitetail management, but if farm number six kills every deer they see, it wrecks the entire effort." He goes on, "I used to hunt public land, but now hunting public for a mature buck is more of a quest than a hunt. Compounding the effects, EHD is a mass killer that is sweeping the state every year. It's sweeping the state year after year. I own some of the best deer habitat in Illinois. 20 years ago, I could sit in a tree on a cool November morning and count on seeing two dozen plus deer and at least one being a mature buck. Now, I'd have to sit in the same tree for a week and I'd feel lucky to even see a good buck. My strategy for big deer used to be get in the woods and eventually a big boy would show because there were plenty. Now I blanket the timber with cameras in hopes of finding a single shooter, then hunt him exclusively till he slips up. I'm starting to actually feel bad when I whack the only shooter left alive. I'm no biologist, and you can say what you want about my opinion, for I'm old now and my view is blurrier than it once was, but throughout my lifetime when it came to hunting anyways, there's a general rule that I could count on. Good things never last. Hopefully I'm wrong this time." So I'm going to start by saying I got a lot of respect for Tim and everything he's done, and I'll say it again later, but the guy knows more about hunting and all that, has forgot more about it than I know, probably. He's got a ton of experience. He's been around a long time doing some really cool stuff. So there might be times in here where it sounds like I'm like arguing with him or whatever, and I'm really not. It's just kind of my opinions on it, and then, no, this is not taken away from anything that he's said or anything he's done or anything like that. So don't take it that way. But I'm going to break this down a little bit because there's different points throughout that I want to make just based on a lot of things that he said there. I think there's a whole lot to unpack, and that's what I'm going to try to do, and I'm going to try to keep it as short as I possibly can. So the first one I wanted to hit, he says, EHD and overhunting has most of us seeing less and less deer. Illinois continues its aggressive herd reduction efforts. So I think that's really kind of a regional issue, just like we've talked about with turkeys for sure. There are plenty of people that have a bunch of turkeys, and then there are others who don't. Like, there's places where you can talk to guys, farmers, that'll tell you they see 30, 40 birds all the time, and then there's guys who never see them, It's definitely pocketed. I think there's places where the herd's better than others. And I think that goes for deer too. I know where there's fields I can drive past in late season and see 50 deer pretty much every evening. And I also sat a lot of hunts this year on some of the properties I hunt anyway, and only saw a handful, if any, deer at times. There are places where the herd is down for sure. There are places where the herd is bordering on out of control also. I mean, no doubt about that. EHD does have a lot to do with that, in my opinion. But it also has a lot to do with habitat. The deer are going to be where the habitat is. And when that changes, the deer are going to move. So it's just like we talked about quail before, I think, on the podcast, and turkeys as well. And deer are no different, where fence rows and small blocks of timber, a lot of those are getting taken out now for farming. A lot of stuff's being cleared to make room for more farming to make it easier. When that stuff leaves, so do the animals and wildlife that inhabit it. So they have to find somewhere else to go. So that definitely is an issue as well. Where there's habitat, you will also find the wildlife. Hunting pressure is definitely higher in certain areas too, which obviously has an adverse and inconsistent effect on herd numbers. If there's more people hunting in one county than another, obviously, or even in a part of a county, there are going to be less deer there because there's just more hunters to kill them. Because this seems to be a localized issue, I do agree with that Illinois is shockingly, I know, hard to believe, out of line with their proposed solutions, such as the longer seasons he mentioned and more effective weapons. Like they're talking about trying to go to some center fire rifles and things like that. Both of those, though, will affect the entire state and don't account for the fact that not all herds have the same issues, which is part of the problem. It doesn't seem like the powers that be recognize the deer in separate herds, more just so one entire herd across the state. So it's not like they're looking at, okay, there's a herd of deer in this part of Jefferson County, and there's a herd of deer in this part of Wayne County, and there's a herd of deer in this part of Champaign County or Fulton County. They just look at the deer herd, I think. At least that's what it seems to me. And then they make their rules, regulations, and programs based off the entire herd throughout the state, which I think is a problem in the first place. It just doesn't seem like they look at it the right way. I do think they look at things county by county, though, when they determine which ones get late winter seasons. I mean, some of them do, some of them don't. So they have to be looking at something like that county by county. But that's about the only time they break anything down as far as I can tell. At the same time, Tim is kind of doing the same thing. He's kind of painting a picture that the whole state is facing the same low numbers, and that's just not the case. Like I said, it's pocketed. Where he's at, there may be low numbers, and I'll get into that a little bit in a minute. But there's other places where deer numbers are super high, and there does need to be something done. So again, it's hard to look at the whole state and just blanket it with a statement either that the deer numbers are lower or the deer numbers are higher. I think there's a lot more nuance to it than that. So the next part I want to talk about, he says, within my circle of friends and other hunters around the state, we see less deer and mature buck numbers have tanked as well. And still the state strives to kill more. So I do feel like I have kind of a unique perspective on this, being that I get to work at the deer processing shop. So I can say at least somewhat anecdotally, also with some, I guess, empirical data, if you want to look at it that way, that the deer mature buck numbers, at least around us, seem to be improving. We really noticed that back sometime around 2019, 2020, that we were seeing more and more bucks in the shop, like guys killing more and more bucks, and good bucks at that. Like it wasn't just everybody killing 2.5, because we see a ton of young deer killed every year, especially during gun season, obviously. You're out there in the middle of November, you've got a gun, what's the first deer that's going to come by in the middle of November, especially the first buck? It's likely a 2.5-year-old looking for a doe. So if you're just out there to shoot something, the first thing you see, that's what you're going to shoot. So obviously we see a lot of those. But somewhere around that time frame, 1920, we started noticing more and more good bucks coming in the shop. I remember specifically one of those years, it was 20 or 21, I think, where it's like every time you looked up, we're back there skinning. Every time you looked up, a truck would pull up, and there was a good rack on the back of it. And that trend has really continued over the past 4 or 5 seasons. Now, will that run out this year? Maybe. I don't really expect that, but it could happen. I mean, obviously, it's only going to be sustained for so long, but it seems like, based on that, we have as good a number of quality bucks as we've had maybe ever. This past season, We didn't get as many giant deer during gun season, but the bow season we had more bigger deer. I've got a couple of 180s, a 90, and a 200 something to do just for the taxidermy, and that doesn't count the ones that came in that I'm not doing that came into the shop. So it's not like the quality wasn't there. Just during the gun season, it didn't seem like we got quite as many. But I don't know if that's either here nor there. Me and Nate actually talked a lot about this as far as the numbers of quality bucks go. He's told me different times where he's heard stories about the guys up where he's at, talking about the old days when there were giant deer everywhere and how great it used to be and how they used to see these big deer all the time. But at the same time as all that, I've talked to Dad and some other guys that were around back then, and when you talk to them and you're talking about big deer during that time frame, 140-inch deer was considered a giant. Like, guys weren't passing 120-inch deer. You'd be silly. You'd get made fun of at the coffee shop if you passed 120-inch deer. So I think that plays a role. And on that note, while I do think I have a little bit different perspective than a lot of hunters, because, and I'm not like saying I have a better perspective or anything, it's just different because I get to see a lot of deer from at least the area that we service, you know, the few counties here in Southern Illinois. I get to see a lot of deer every year. A lot of bucks, a lot of does. Whereas a guy that's hunting, he sees what his buddies kill, he sees what he's fortunate enough to shoot or see from the stand, and that's kind of the what he gets to see. So, like I said, it's just kind of a different perspective. But even though I have that, Dad has an even more extensive perspective on that. Because while I'm thinking about it, it's, you know, past 15 years or so, from what I can remember of being around the shop and actually being able to pay attention and kind of remember what the deer herd looked like and the number of big bucks and whatnot. Dad's been doing it for way longer than that. He's been running the shop for a long time and working at it, you know, even longer. So if anyone can attest to the health of the herd over the years, I feel like it would be him. Obviously, there's some other processors around that could tell you the same kind of thing. When we've talked about it, like when I've talked about it with him, he said there are more bigger bodied, bigger racked deer now than there ever were. And again, that he's been doing it for, I wouldn't even want to say how long, at least 30 years, more than that, probably 40 years, been doing the deer processing stuff. So he's been able to see over the years what the deer look like. I know some stories they tell about back in the day, you could tell what county a deer came from just based on the body size of it. Specifically where we're at, the neighboring county, they just had bigger bodied deer. And now we're starting to see some giant bodied deer where we're at too. And he's just noticed it over the years that, and he says that we definitely have more better deer now than we ever have. And again, this just goes for our few counties here in Southern Illinois, and I'm sure there's places where that isn't the case. But again, that's kind of the problem with looking at the deer herd across the entire state instead of on a more regional scale. Tim goes on here in his post. He says, landowners practicing whitetail management find it's rough when the neighbors have a handful of tags in their pocket. You better control a lot of ground for your local herd. Otherwise, the outcome is ultimately over harvest. In a solid block of timber, 5 farms can practice whitetail management. But if a farm, number 6, kills every deer they see, it wrecks the entire effort. There's a lot of truth to what Tim's saying there. Without thousands of acres, it's really hard to manage a herd if you have bad neighbors. If you don't have a bunch of like-minded people over thousands of acres, it's going to be super hard to really, really manage a herd. You can have definitely a positive effect, even if you only control a certain amount. You can manipulate it to try to have more control than the acreage you have. And what I mean by that is trying to entice deer to stay on your property when you can actually have control over what lives and what dies. We've talked about that tons of times on the podcast. But if you don't have all those acres, at some point that deer's leaving your property. I mean, he just is. And likely in the daylight at some point, especially during the rut. So, you know, because, I mean, you still have to do that, though. I'm sorry, I'll back up a little bit. You still have to try to practice that management because to his overall point, the state isn't going to make it any easier. And I'll get to that at the end when I kind of wrap this thing up. Most of the time, though, if you practice, like I said, if you practice quality deer management and your neighbors don't, you'll eventually have the opportunities at the deer you want because they're going to figure out that if they go to the neighbor's property, they get shot at or they get shot and then they don't have any deer left. Now, is that going to have a negative impact on the entire neighborhood? Absolutely, especially for a year or two. But as it starts to come back, the deer that they weren't able to harvest, they didn't kill, are going to figure that out at some point. And then they're all just going to stay away from that property. I mean, how many times we've all heard horror stories of people killing 20, 30 deer on a property in 1 year, and then the numbers are never the same again. Well, they eventually the herd comes back, but they don't go back to that same property. Why would they? There may not be, you know, as many there if you had better neighbors, obviously. So like I said, eventually that herd's going to bounce back. If you didn't have those neighbors, you might have more deer or more quality deer around. But on the flip side, if you have good neighbors who practice the same management, there may be more big deer in the area, but they also are going to have just as good a chance to kill them as you are because they're practicing the same management. So you might not even see the same amount of big deer because they're going to be more likely to be on that property. So it's kind of a give and take. There's definitely pros and cons to each of them. Good neighbors are great. I would rather have the good neighbors that are practicing that so we have more bigger deer. I do think it'd give you more chance eventually of consistently killing mature deer. But at the same time, if you have those bad neighbors, it's going to really suck for a while. But eventually, you're going to have the deer on you more often than they are. You know, and maybe more so, if you have those good neighbors, they actually maybe have more chance of killing them than you, just depending on how things lay, and especially depending on who has the first hot does during the rut. So not to say, like I said, that's definitely the scenario that we would all like to have, but that's not to say the bad neighbors are going to hurt you forever either, I guess is the point I'm trying to make there. I'm trying to kind of hit all my points on here, read and add some stuff in as well, so it doesn't sound like I'm just reading off a screen. So I apologize if I bounce around a little bit, but I'm going to get back to his post here. Compounding the effects, EHD is a mass killer that is sweeping the state year after year. I'm going to be real short on this one because I don't want to turn this into an EHD podcast, but EHD sucks. I mean, it does. When it hits hard, it can absolutely devastate a herd and wipe out a total age class of bucks. We had a really bad hit in 2012. A lot of people had a really bad hit. I think it was 2007. From the 2012 one, that's part of the reason we think the herd started to come back in like 1920 is because it wiped out 4, 5, and 6-year-old bucks. Well, it takes 4 years to grow a 4-year-old buck. So, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, all those years in there, by 17, 18, we're starting to see some bounce back. But then like by 1920, the overall herd was starting to be healthier again, it seemed like. From that, that was a really widespread outbreak of EHD. That was a super different circumstance where it doesn't happen much because the drought was so bad. Like it was a historic drought in 2012. You guys, I'm sure, remember that if you were around for it. Now there's definitely a potential for that to happen again. However, obviously it's not likely. It would take a historic drought. But EHD definitely hits somewhere every year. And it's been proven that it's not something that either doesn't happen all over the place or it does happen all over the place. It's pretty localized. When droughts happen, like the last few years, we've definitely had some droughts. And I think it has affected some areas pretty harshly. But others, like the places I hunt, I don't think EHD has necessarily been a problem, even though it's been fairly dry. There's actually some research out there that suggests that EHD affects bigger bucks more than it does anything else. Maybe not affects them more, but they're more likely to get infected because they have more surface area where the midge flies can actually bite them. So on their antlers and stuff when they're in velvet, and that's when this is really happening a lot of times, that late summer when it gets dry. So there's a lot of thinking that that's why you see more bucks dead from it than does. Also, part of that could be you just notice the bucks that are dead from it more than the does, but I think it stands to reason that if they have more places to bite them, their antlers are down there close to the water. If they're not getting on their nose or whatever, they're getting on their antlers. And then that's why you see when EHD hits, it wipes out a lot of your mature bucks, not necessarily as many of the young bucks, not necessarily as many does. I'd like to see definitely more research done on EHD than what they're doing with CWD, but right now the money is in CWD. And that's a whole podcast on its own. And like I said, I'm not going to turn this into a EHD podcast or a CWD podcast, so I'll leave it here. EHD is bad. It's usually fairly local. Some deer can survive it. There's deer in the South that get it every year and survive. They do build some immunity to it once they have it once. It's not likely to kill them the second time if they make it through. So some deer can survive it. A lot don't, though. And when it hits, it 100% has a horrible adverse effect on a local herd. So I'm going to leave that right there. Like I said, we've done EHD podcasts in the past. I'm sure we'll do some more in the future. You guys can check those out. He goes on here, back to Tim's post. I own some of the best deer habitat in Illinois. 20 years ago, I could sit in a tree on a cool November evening and count on seeing 24 plus deer and at least one being a mature buck. Now I'd have to sit in the same tree for a week and I'd feel lucky to even see a good buck. My strategy for big deer used to be get in the woods and eventually a big boy would show because there were plenty. Now I blanket the timber with cameras in hopes of finding a single shooter, then hunt him exclusively till he slips up. I'm starting to actually feel bad when I whack the only shooter left alive. Now there's a lot of variables that go into this. Maybe his neighbor's habitat has improved. Maybe enough of it around him has gone downhill that the neighborhood doesn't hold just as many deer in general, meaning he doesn't have as many either. Maybe his neighbors, like he mentioned earlier, are the problem. Maybe they're killing too many deer. Maybe he had different standards for deer and what he called mature 20 years ago, like everyone else did. We've talked about that several times. I can remember back then, even the TV guys were saying that like the 3.5-year-old bucks were mature. And that's something you don't hear anymore. Now, most of those guys won't even look at them until they're 5.5. So that's something that could go into it too. We also tend to remember things way better than they were. We forget the bad stuff and remember what we want a lot of times. That goes for pretty much anything, and especially hunting. Of course, you remember the one time you saw that giant buck, but we forget about the 15 other hunts that we had before that where we didn't see anything, which is why, you know, you didn't note it in your memory because there wasn't anything worth noting when you were hunting out there. So again, I'm sure you can think about lots of things where you look back on it and you think, gosh, that was great. But then when you really start thinking about it, you realize it wasn't quite as good as I was remembering right off. Obviously, this is all speculation because I haven't actually talked to Tim personally to ask him what he thinks the problem is. But based on the article, it sounds like he believes it's due to a lack of intervention from the state and bad neighbors, which are definitely valid concerns. I mean, both of those things obviously can have a bad effect on hunting and our opportunities. They are what they are. So again, that's just kind of me thinking out loud about what could potentially be happening that he didn't mention in the article or in his post. I keep calling it an article. I mean, it kind of was. But that'd be something that he would have to say. And he didn't in the post. So I'm just speculating. I'm not trying to throw anything out there for sure, like concrete. Just some thoughts. He goes on, he says, I'm no biologist and you can say what you want about my opinion. For I'm old now and my view is blurrier than it once was, but throughout my lifetime, when it came to hunting anyways, there's a general rule that I could count on. Good things never last. Hopefully I'm wrong this time. Now again, I said this at the beginning, but the whole tone of this might kind of sound like I disagree with Tim, but I actually share a lot of his concerns. I'd really like to hear his proposed solutions though. I think that's why I kind of ultimately decided to do a podcast on this, because I don't, and I'm not saying this is what he's doing, but I don't like to complain about stuff just to complain and get people fired up without offering solutions. I'm sure that wasn't his intent, and he was probably just had some thoughts about this and wanting to put them out there and get them out there, and they're definitely valid. A lot of people agreed with him, and it made its rounds definitely throughout the Facebook and Instagram world. But I try to, if I'm going to do something like this, a podcast on it or a post, at least throw some solutions for whatever they're worth that I think might help. Because I try to keep it as a general rule, and I don't always do it, but I try not to just complain about stuff or talk about stuff without offering some other perspective or some solutions. Tim's been around a long time. Like I said, he's forgot more about hunting and wildlife than I know. So I think his ideas would be extremely valuable if he put them out there. Personally, I do think something needs to happen to offset harvest numbers across the board. There's definitely more deer being killed now with the crossbow season being with the regular archery season for everybody and with rifles being legal. I think both of those things have made a huge difference. And you can look back, it aligns with some harvest numbers that we've seen, deer numbers that we've seen turned in at the shop. It kind of aligns with that. Bow season has gone up considerably since they've started doing crossbows. And I've also done episodes on the effect of having the firearm season right in the middle of the rut. And I do think that if something doesn't change, there could be a time when we don't have the number of mature bucks that we do now. So just what he's talking about. I do think there's some things need to change. I think the firearm season should be moved to the 1st of December. Let the deer finish out the rut without the added pressure. It's so, in my opinion, so bad for them to have all that pressure on them right there in the middle of what should be peak breeding time when they're doing the most breeding. Which, if you're in an area that doesn't have as many deer, that could be a lot of the reason why. They're all getting shot at when they should be out there breeding. I think, again, let them do their thing and then give people 10 straight days to hunt at the beginning of December. I forget, I did an episode on this. I forget what days I said, but like Sunday to, or start it on Friday, run it to the next Sunday or something, like the first Friday in December to the Sunday or something like that. Not only would it help promote breeding within the herd, it also would allow more people to hunt. So if you think about that, some people can't get away on the weekends. Some people have to work on the weekends. So aside from the Thursday, Friday, or if they're maybe they work Thursday through Sunday, they don't get to gun hunt without taking vacation days. So it would allow them to either bookend that week with their vacation days and they can hunt more, or not have to take vacation days and just hunt throughout that week in that 10-day stretch. And also, if you're hunting deer Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you might just be getting on him by Sunday, and then bam, you can't hunt him again for 2 weeks. So I think it'd be great for the gun hunters too, especially the people that only gun hunt. And there are a lot of big deer to be shot in December. We see year after year as many big deer killed in second gun season, which is usually the first part of December, as we do first. At least, I don't know if per capita is the right word, but per hunter, you know, because less people are hunting in second season for sure. But if you want my full thoughts on that, like I said, I did an episode on it. It's Full Draw Friday, number 45. You can go back and check that out. At the same time, if they want to expand the season to curb overpopulation, they can do that in counties where they actually have overpopulation. There's no reason to do that across the entire state because, like Tim's saying, there are some places where the deer herd is down and where the mature buck numbers may be down. We have the technology to figure out which counties those are. And I don't mean hunter surveys or the Farm Bureau stats or the number of car accidents or whatever the heck they're using now or some combination of all those. I'm talking about like actual technology. Get out there, fly some drones over feeding areas at night and find out just how many deer are in a given period or in a given area. And you could do that in a very short period of time. It would not take long to go out, especially late season with a drone when the leaves are off. You could fly a county in a night and figure out how many deer there were. Almost exactly how many deer were in a county with some thermal drones and some artificial intelligence and some programs that are designed to do that. We have the technology. I'm not sure if they are using that. If they aren't, they definitely should be. Then they could make actual educated decisions based on actual data rather than whatever they're doing now, like I said. And it obviously isn't working because if it was working, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. They wouldn't be considering extending the season or adding more lethal weapons to raise harvest totals. If what they were doing now was working, they wouldn't have to do that stuff. So here's the problem with all this, though. And maybe I'm not to be Debbie Downer, but this is why the actual management of local herds falls on the property owners and hunters in a given area instead of relying on the state. And some of you, I'm sure, know this. A lot of you probably know this. The state isn't going to do anything that doesn't benefit them financially. Big shocker, it all comes down to money. The almighty dollar runs everything in government. You should know that by now if you don't. So Tim mentioned he mentioned the wants of veteran hunters in there. I promise you, the state does not give two you-know-whats about the wants of any hunter. That's just not where the money is. We're not banding together as a bunch of hunters and paying lobbyists to go do our dirty work in Springfield or Chicago, wherever the state's run. We just don't have the money, the resources to do it. The money is in the Farm Bureau, the insurance lobbyists, the sale of licenses, permits, stamps, and so on. So they're going to do whatever benefits those groups because that's where the money is. Again, hate to be Debbie Downer, and if that's breaking news, I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. So I don't know if things will ever change as far as the state goes. I do think we're in a pretty good spot right now, though, as far as our mature buck numbers go. But two things can be true at once. While we may have as good of an overall herd as ever, if it's not taken care of, it won't last. To Tim's point, that falls on the state, but it also falls on us individually. I usually don't do like closing thoughts or whatever, but I will on this one. So for what it's worth, I don't ever trust any form of government to take care of me or anything that I have. And I rarely think it's a good idea to ask them to step in and try to solve a problem. Personal agency is way more important to me than relying on a government to solve any of my problems or take care of anything that I have. And that goes for everything, including hunting. So try to be good stewards of the land and the resources it provides. Being a hunter is an amazing privilege, and it often defines many of us. But even before being a hunter, be a conservationist. If you aren't, you may not get to be a hunter forever. See you guys next time.